Good afternoon once again, everyone, and welcome to Midday. Dan Roderick's here. It's Midday Friday. Thank you again for joining us and making Midday part of your day. In this hour of the show, we're going to be talking about the decision last week that made so much news. We didn't have a chance to talk about it because we were doing our preparation for the primary thing here on Midday. This was the a decision by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office to deem disparaging of Native Americans the Washington Redskins logo and name, and to withdraw trademark protection for the Washington NFL team. We're going to talk about that today with Milton Kent, the sports at large commentator here at WYPR. But first, we start off with Baltimore attorney Jim Astrakhan, who's joining us again in the studio. Jim, in addition to being a lawyer in Baltimore and expert in intellectual property law, is a senior adjunct professor at law, has been for quite some time, and specializes in the law of trademarks and unfair competition. He teaches that at the University of Maryland, also teaches at the University of Baltimore Law School. Jim, it's nice to have you with us again.
Hi, Dan. Great to be here today.
So we're going to do a little bit of explaining here up front, and then we'll talk about this controversy that this ruling has sparked, and invite phone calls from our listeners. 410-662-8780 is the number for Midday. Our email address, midday@wypr.org. I wanted to have this opportunity with you because I know you know so much about this. And I'm learning, as I guess a lot of Americans are, about the powers of the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board of the United States Patent and Trademark Office. Didn't know such a panel existed. Actually, I didn't know how these decisions were made. And I also didn't realize that there was precedent for this ruling, that such rulings have been made in the past, and that there's a standard here for names, logos, trademarks that disparage persons or bring them into contempt or disrepute. And so let's get started with this, Jim. First of all, tell us a little bit about this panel and the Trademark Office, specifically the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board.
There is a United States Patent and Trademark Office in Virginia, and it's comprised of, as far as trademarks are concerned, examiners who take in a trademark and decide whether or not the trademark is going to be registrable. And there is a panel of judges, administrative judges, who make up the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board, the TTAB. And that board hears appeals from examiners' decisions, but also hears cancellation proceedings, so that if somebody feels that a mark that has been registered should not have been registered because of fraud or because the mark disparages, they would file a petition to cancel the mark, and it would go to this group of administrative judges, which is exactly what happened. I think it happened before three administrative judges.
Right, and the vote was 2-1.
2-1.
On the Redskins. Now, did someone challenge the trademark?
Yes.
Okay. Do trademarks come up for renewal?
They do, but when they come up for renewal, they really don't go through this examination process. You just have to file an affidavit that you're continuing to use the mark, and then it's good. I think it's 10 years that it's good for. And what's really interesting to note, two things. One is that there are two types of trademark rights. There are federal rights, which this case involves, and then there are state rights, common law rights. And it's important to note that because the federal government removed these federal rights, canceled these federal rights, the state rights are not affected. So the what they're called common law trademark rights, mm-hmm, that belong to the Washington Football Club have not been affected by this.
But, and that, is that state of Maryland?
Well,
or
it's
Virginia?
It's the entire country. It's any place that the mark has been in use as a priority. So any place where this mark has been used by professional football first, they would have common law rights. And there are...
Okay, I just wanted to understand. Yeah. You said there were states. There's a state...
State, yes. Yeah. State by state by state by state.
Okay.
So if I use the mark in California, I would have common law rights in California. If I use the mark in Florida, I'd have common law rights. But because professional football travels and is broadcast on television and radio, they have had priority of rights with respect to the services, football, probably since the 19...
Okay, maybe I didn't understand something. I thought there was a separate state right granted or state there, protection granted.
And that's the common law rights, correct.
Okay, it's just common law.
Common law rights.
Okay. The phrase disparages persons or brings them into contempt or disrepute. I assume this has been in law for quite some time?
It's been in the law for a long time. It's been subject to different challenges and different definitions of meaning and so forth. And another thing that is interesting about this case is this is not the first time, and you're aware of that. In 1999, the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board also ruled that this mark disparages. Susan Harjo was the plaintiff in that case. And they ruled that this mark disparages Native Americans, and they canceled the mark in 1999. And the case was appealed to the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia. And Judge Kohler Catelli, who passed on the review, said that the Trademarks Office decision was not supported by substantial evidence. And worse, she had waited too long, the plaintiff had waited too long, and her cause of action was barred by something called laches, L-A-C-H-E-S, which basically means, in English, that you've sat on your hands when you should have been doing something in the courts.
How does a panel decide if something disparages? It seems so subjective. What's the standard?
Well, there is no standard, and it is very subjective, and that's why the district court, in the first instance, reversing the TTAB, said there was no substantial evidence shown. So the problem that they're faced with in this case is that the mark had to be disparaging at the time it was first registered, not today. And so this mark was first registered, I think, in 1967. And that means they would have to provide evidence of what the mark meant in association with football as far back as 1967. So to provide live testimonial evidence would be really quite a challenge. So here what they did is they relied really on anecdotal evidence. They had some surveys, they had some dictionary meanings, and they traced dictionaries over the years. And they had, which I think was new, I think it was new, they had minutes from the National Congress of American Indians asserting that this was a disparaging mark and it should be canceled. So it was all anecdotal evidence that they had. And also, interestingly, there was no new testimony in this case. The parties, the lawyers, agreed that they would rely and admit most of the evidence that had been introduced in the 1999 proceeding. And, of course, the Trademark Office, the TTAB, had its eye on Kohler Catelli's
ruling. District Court's ruling.
And basically saying, how do we cure this?
Yeah.
But one other interesting aspect
of this. So it's 15 years later. Is it a different panel, different people ruling?
It's a different group of judges ruling. But here's the key. I think that the TTAB was able to take liberty with its decision because Congress had changed the law under the American Invents Act.
The American
Invents Act. It's a congressional
bill. Invents?
Invents.
I-N-V-E-N-T-S?
Yes.
It was
patent amendment law.
Okay.
But it affected where an appeal is lodged.
Uh-huh.
And so what Congress, in essence, did in this particular case, not specifically this case, but under these facts, it divested the U.S. District Court where Kohler Catelli sits in D.C. with the jurisdiction to hear the appeal. And instead, the appeal is now going to be heard in the Eastern District of Virginia. So it's like a brand new court. So it's sort of like game playing when you come down to it.
Different people involved in this from 15 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. One thing that we should clear up for people who are wondering, does this mean that the Washington Redskins can't use that name anymore? That actually does not mean it doesn't even go near there.
It does not even go near there. It's not even close. They have absolute common law rights. If somebody was to start slapping Washington Redskins or Redskins on a football jersey, they would be sued whether or not the mark was in place.
Right. So that's all. They lose the protection of the trademark.
What they lose is not the protection of the trademark because they have those common law rights I mentioned before.
Okay.
What they lose are certain benefits to having a federal registration, such as a presumption of ownership and a presumption of validity. They lose the ability to provide the registration to customs to prevent counterfeit goods from coming through into the country. They lose what's called a national priority of rights, which they don't really need because they've been in business so long in all corners of the country.
So they can't stop me from opening a store that says Washington Redskins shoe store.
Sure, well, they probably could.
They probably could in Maryland.
Yeah, they probably could do that, or in any other state.
Okay,
that's a discussion for another 2 hours.
All right,
but they probably could do that. Mm. But the point is, as you said, they haven't lost their trademark rights.
Right. Okay.
But
no, I said that.
You said that.
I thought that's what happened.
You said that.
But they're saying they really haven't. But they haven't lost very much, it doesn't sound
they
like.
They haven't, but what they have had is a government agency making a ruling 40 years later that they're using a name that disparages a percentage of the population. And that decision has to be seen through the eyes of the population that's being disparaged. So it's not you and I who would view whether this is disparagement. Under the trademark law, it's Native Americans as a composite
right.
that would have to be the ones affected. It doesn't matter what you and I think. It's what they think.
And everyone who wants to register something or get federal protection for a name or a logo to get a trademark goes through this process, right? It goes through a panel that decides whether what you're naming something or calling something disparages persons? Or?
No, generally it goes through an examiner, which is one lawyer sitting at the USPTO.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't like the lawyer's decision, if he or she says, I'm not going to register your mark because I think it disparages, then you can appeal that decision to this group of people, these judges. But generally, most trademark registrations end with the examiner either denying it or issuing the trademark.
So let me go over that with you again.
Yeah.
In terms of what the Washington Redskins football team loses here, you don't think it's actually very much in terms of its rights.
I think it's not very much in terms of its rights. I think that their trademark rights are pretty solid. I would not like to have a government ruling if I was the owner of the team indicating that the team, in the eyes of the United States government, disparages a substantial population. I think there's 800,000, 900,000.
Yeah, but I mean, the Daniel Snyder, that's the owner's name.
Yeah,
he's heard all this before. He's been urged to change the name of the team.
Right. As
President Obama, I think, has said something to him about
As has Edward Bennett Williams and Jack Kent Cook.
Yeah, the previous owners. Yeah.
But here's something that's also interesting. We're not really talking about whether it's disparaging or not.
We'll get into that in this hour, but I just wanted to go over the law with you.
Okay.
So I'm trying to get a sense of what the harm is here to the Redskins, other than reputation. Right?
Well, you've got reputation. You've got this inability now to register your mark with the customs to prevent, T-shirts from coming in from out of the country. The customs people will not stop to find these
now.
Okay.
All right.
The national priority they do not need, and the presumption of validity that follows a trademark registration is now gone, but.
You won't see customs busting anyone at a flea market over this anymore, right?
That's a good question.
Didn't we have customs agents busting a flea market a couple of years ago?
We did.
It goes on from time to time over counterfeit goods or something, right?
Maybe they'll pull the Orioles and the Ravens, but they won't pull the Redskins
because
there's no registration.
Right. Listen, we welcome your phone calls. If you have questions about this ruling by the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board of the United States Patent and Trademark Office on the trademark of the Washington Redskins, Attorney Jim Astrakhan with us in this hour of midday, and Milton Kent, Sports at Large commentator, will be talking to us in just a moment. 410-662-8780 is our number for midday. It's a subject that's been very controversial. We haven't had a chance to talk about it here on midday. We are doing so in this hour. 866-661-9309. What do you think of this ruling? Does the federal government have standing to make, in your eyes, to make such a ruling? I guess it does under the law. The law exists. Congress made it. But you can have an opinion about that. You also are welcome to register an opinion about the name of this team and what do you think ought to be done about it, if anything. What would you say to Daniel Snyder if you could have a few minutes with him? 410-662-8780. Also call in if you're perfectly fine with the Redskins name, too. We'd like to hear from you. Welcome back to Midday Friday. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for tuning in. Jim Astrakhan back with us on the show today, a Baltimore attorney and expert in trademark law and intellectual property rights. So We went over this. I just want to make sure I get it right. That in terms of the legal damage done to the Washington Redskins by this ruling, you don't think it's very much. I understand what you said about its standing nationally in terms of as being a priority for protection. That might be gone. It'd be difficult to stop imported goods that use the Redskins logo and name, right?
Well, having customs do it for
customs
you.
Customs do it for you.
You could do it.
But where it's been used, and this gets us back to the common law idea, where it has already been used.
Where it's already been used, the Redskins have rights. So let me try to explain this in 2 seconds. There are two types of trademark rights, federal and common law, but both require use. And so you do not have to register a trademark with the USPTO to have trademark rights.
Okay.
You get those rights by using it where you use it.
Hmm.
But if you don't have a registration, somebody can use your mark in a different market than you're using it in, and they can get priority rights in that market.
But in the case of an NFL team that's been around for a long time,
they're all over the country, and those rights really don't count so much.
Okay.
They really don't count that much.
In terms of meeting the standard of what's disparaging to persons or bring them into contempt or disrepute, those are the words from the statute, right?
Yes.
I read that the Redskins had argued, I guess apparently in 1999, and used the same argument this time, that the word Redskins, has a different meaning now. And I saw the comparison made to the word Lakers, Los Angeles Lakers. That name no longer has its original meaning. Its original meaning goes back to people who dwelt near lakes in Minnesota when there was a basketball team in Minnesota that later moved to Los Angeles. So it's completely lost its original meaning. And apparently this is one of the arguments given by the Redskins in defense of in its defense.
And that's exactly right, because the TTAB or the courts have got to determine what the meaning of the word is in association with the goods and services. And what the Redskins have been saying consistently is that when you say the word Redskins, you're thinking football, you're not thinking disparaging. Mm-hmm. And the Native American Indians have been saying, no, that's not the case either. We think it's disparaging. And so that's how the argument has been going down.
And from your look at the record, the claim of disparagement has come consistently from Native Americans. There was a small group in this case and then an earlier group.
Yes, in both cases, it's the Native Americans. But I do want to add, and I pulled some stuff out of the record, because as well as this Congress I mentioned, there were lots of Native American tribes who wrote to John McCain, who wrote to the Trademark Office, who wrote to the Redskins, including the Modoc tribe, the Miami tribe, the Ottawa tribe, the Peoria tribe, the Seneca tribe, the Cayuga tribe, the Saboba band, the Tula Lip tribe, the Choctaw Nation, the Seminole Nation of Oklahoma, the Pimas, the Eastern Band of the Cherokees, the Mattaponies, all saying that we think that we have been honored by the use of a warrior in these logos.
Mm-hmm.
We don't think this is disparaging at all. So, you've got this,
They like the logo?
The name and the logo. And some like the logo, too, because it's,
Milton Kent is with us, sports at large commentator here at WYPR. Thanks for coming in, Milton.
No problem.
Where have you been on this over the years? You decided this is disparaging and the name should change.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like with everything else in life, your view evolves. I mean, I have to admit, when I was younger, after the Colts left, I was a Redskins fan for a while. And, my family even jokes with me now because I'm Ravens, full-blooded Raven fan.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, one of my sisters gave me for Christmas one year, she made a tissue box with Redskins stuff on, the logo and everything on it. So,
Cozy?
Yeah, tissue cozy. Yeah, exactly. So, but, I guess I apply, the 21st century standard, and I say to myself, if you weren't in FedEx Field, if you're not there, if you walked out of FedEx Field and walked down the street and you saw someone in Native American headdress, would you walk up to them and call them a Redskin? And I mean, how could you, you know, it would be the same thing if you saw me, an African American, and you called me a black skin. I don't see how you know, I don't see how you get around that.
This Facebook posting from Debbie says what you're saying here. She says, the best insight I've seen on whether or not the team name is offensive. Ask yourself if it's something you could call a person to his or her face without offending. I don't think this team name can pass that test.
But what I find interesting, and you know, to Jim's point about the Native American tribes, the linkage, you know, the Redskins can say all they want. You know, the team can say all they want now. Well, this is, you know, now when you hear Redskins, you think football. Well, here's the problem. When you see a game at FedEx Field, right at the 50-yard line is the team logo of a Native American. When you hear their fight song, Hail to the Redskins, there are words in it that say, Braves on the warpath, mm-hmm. you know, beat them, fight them. You know, I think there's even like a scalp them or something in there. So there's no way you can say that that's not a reference to Native Americans. Now, right. If you want to make the argument that it's not detrimental, I suppose you could. I just don't think you can get away with it.
So let me jump in and state that there's public opinion involved in this, but it's really evidentiary public opinion. And you put this in perspective. You've got a trademark that is registered by the United States government starting in 1967. And behind this trademark, a business, which is what a football team is, or a football league, has spent $1 billion in promotion to build goodwill in this brand. And then 40 years later, the government comes along and says, well, it was derogatory when we registered it, when we had allowed it to be registered in 1967, which is the test. And now we're going to take it away from you after 40 years. And the courts
They said it wasn't derogatory.
It was derogatory then. It had to be derogatory when it was registered, not becoming derogatory. Registered derogatory when it was registered. That was the error. And so the courts have said.
Excuse me. Do you mean the board said it was derogatory in 1967?
1967, yes.
They acknowledged that.
Well, no, it's not that they acknowledged it. That was the evidence that they considered. That is the decision they came to. Their holding was that when don't forget, the marks were, there was five or six marks. They were registered from 67 to 92. But when the marks were registered, they were derogatory. That's the basis for the cancellation proceeding. And so the courts have said that when you wait so long to try to take somebody's rights away, this didn't happen within 2 years or 3 years or 4 years after registration. When you wait so long, your burden as a plaintiff is substantially stronger than it would be if you had filed within a couple of years, because the stakes are absolutely enormous, mm-hmm. billions of dollars.
I just don't understand something. If they ruled that it was derogatory or disparaging in 1967, why were they granted protection?
It was a mistake. What they were basically saying is that the examiner who allowed the registration in 1967 and 1982 and 1993 and so forth and so on did not consider this derogatory.
And that was a mistake.
And that was a mistake.
Wasn't that a value judgment made in the 1960s?
Well, of course it was. But now
now they're saying that was a mistake.
That was a mistake. Well, and to support the case.
But isn't it evolving standards, Jim? To Milton's point about how your thinking evolves.
You cannot address it as an evolving standard. And that's what Kohler-Catelli said when she reversed them.
Okay.
She said, you are providing evidence from the 1990s and from the year 2000 to substantiate what you say had occurred back in 1967. That is wrong. You have not supported your decision, TTAB, with substantial evidence.
Evidence that was a mistake in 67.
Right. And so now the biggest piece of evidence that they're showing in this new decision is 1991 and 1992 resolutions of the National Congress of Native Americans, which are intended to reflect what the views of the word Redskins were, at least in 1967.
Okay. So we have the legal standard, and then we have the public argument over
here. Well done.
There's two things going on. That's fine.
Indeed,
I'm glad you're here, Jim, and I'm glad you're here.
Yes, that's absolutely right.
Yeah. Now, let's take some calls. We'd like to hear from our listeners on this. We haven't had a chance to talk about this before, and we probably won't talk about it for a while again, but let's hear from you. Leon in Hagerstown, you're up next. Go right ahead. Hi.
Okay. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
First question has to do with some legal minutia. If I hear you correctly, discussing common law as opposed to statutory protection. There is no national common law. I was under the impression that if a product was in interstate commerce, that you there was a national common law standard. Am I incorrect?
The effect is going to be that you're going to have national rights, but I'm not aware of any national common law standard. It's market by market by market. And in reality, you have to look at state law by state law by state law, which are probably going to be very, very similar, but they're going to be distinctions. And there's going to be cases in each jurisdiction that are going to be different as opposed to using more of a federal standard.
Okay. And Leon, you had another question? Go ahead.
Yeah, the other one has to do with the specifics of this disparagement. Now, having taught history at the University of Maryland and done a lot of research, I have read where Sitting Bull actually spoke of himself as a red man. I know that the Redskins hired a researcher at the Smithsonian to prepare a document showing where the concept of Redskins and red men was common usage in the 19th century. I don't know how far back it went before that, by American Indians. And that that argument was never even discussed by the anti-Redskin faction. I also know that the Cleveland caricature of an Indian, and I've forgotten the name of their mascot, which is some certainty like
Chief Wahoo. Chief Wahoo, yeah.
It's seriously disparaging.
Right, Cleveland Indians.
And none of these activists are making a sound about that.
That's not true, sir.
Okay. All right, let's hear from Milton.
With all due respect, that's not true.
Yeah.
In fact, there's been a lot of comments about not only the Cleveland Indians, also the Atlanta Braves.
Chief Nakahoma. Yeah.
In fact, I just read a piece a couple days ago that the Kansas City Chiefs are preparing for what they know will be the next. I think they feel that if the Redskins appeal, if that is successful, if the Redskins' name is changed, they feel as though the Chiefs will probably be the next one to go.
How do you feel about that? I don't see that. Indian tribes had chiefs, no? I mean, that was what we called them. That's what the white man called them.
What the chiefs will be leaning on is, apparently when the predecessor of the Kansas City Chiefs were the Dallas Texans, when the Texans moved to Kansas City, the mayor of Kansas City at the time helped facilitate the move, and he was called the chief. So their argument will be that the franchise was named for this mayor. His nickname.
Really? That's in the team's history?
Yes, and that they incorporated a Native American lore
symbolism.
Yeah, because their stadium is called Arrowhead Stadium.
Arrowhead Stadium. Yeah.
You know, reference to American Indians is not going to be, off limits. Redskins, there's a lot of evidence in the record to show that Redskins is a disparaging term, that it's never been referred to in a nice sense. Mm. And they put a lot of newspaper and articles. Right down to Northwest Passage when Walter Brennan turned to somebody when he was left in the swamp and he said, "Get me a redskin." Mm-hmm. I mean, that's disparaging. But the word chief, just because it refers to Indians, certainly doesn't disparage anybody, and it's not going to be legally off limits. It may be politically off limits, but not legally off limits.
Let's take another call. Elliot in Baltimore, you're on Midday. Go right ahead, please.
Hello there. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I was curious if either you or the guests could kind of predict what the economic impact would be if they were to change the name. All the money it would take, private and public, to get that change going. How expensive would that be?
That's an interesting question. You remember, Milton, when the Baltimore Bullets went to Washington and then played for a while as the Washington Bullets for several years, and then the owner, Abe Paulin, decided to change the name from Washington Bullets to Washington Wizards. Mm-hmm. I remember that worked out pretty well for them in terms of sales of merchandise associated with the new logo.
Yeah. I think recent history has shown us that when a team moves, it's usually associated with a move, but when a team changes its nickname, there's usually some kind of residual, people want to run out and buy the new stuff. I mean, just this year, the New Orleans team in the NBA, they moved from years ago, used to play in Charlotte, and they were called the Charlotte Hornets. They moved to New Orleans, became the Pelicans.
So, I remember that.
And they've generated a lot of money selling Pelican stuff. Well, the Charlotte Bobcats, the team that replaced the Hornets, they're now in the process of changing their name back to the Hornets because that was a more successful name
than Bobcats.
It was more indigenous to that area. There was there's some kind of local history about Hornets and Charlotte. So I'm sure you're going to find you're going to see kids all over the place buying, you know, kids and adults buying up new stuff because they want to buy new stuff.
Daniel Snyder has an opportunity, moving away from legalisms for a minute, in terms of public relations, to do something really grandiose here, and you know, involve the community in naming the team. I see it a total positive coming from it because I just don't see. I've heard from lots of people who are upset about this ruling by the patent office, including Larry Hogan, who's now the Republican nominee for governor of Maryland. People who just, you know, they see big government, federal government, sinister activity by the government here. But I don't know. I think you could spin it around easily and turn it into a positive for the Washington NFL team if it was smart.
You could, but I don't think you can leave the trademark determination untouched because it has too much effect on what happens to other people who register marks and then 40 years later. Their mark is declared.
Oh, no, I'm with you on that.
And I think Congress is going to step in. Congress will.
Oh, really?
I think Congress is going to impose what I think they would do is, as there are other sections in the trademark law, the Congress is going to impose a statute of limitations. You have so many years to bring a petition for opposition, for cancellation, I'm sorry.
So the concept of evolving standard, what happens to that?
You could again, you're back to the meaning of the trademark at the time it was registered. I mean, and why did these people wait so long to bring this? And that's part of the problem. That's one of the reasons why it was tossed out.
This is a little confusing in my mind. I go to evolving standard. I mean, as time goes by, Native Americans, I don't know, become...
Right.
Decide that it is disparaging.
We're living in a more...
They shouldn't have accepted it to begin with.
We're living in a more politically correct... society and
more sensitive society.
So somebody wakes up and says, "This really, really, really bothers me," but it didn't bother my grandfather.
Yeah,
it could be, you know, it could be sort of a power. I mean, you know, when have Native Americans in our society ever had any sense of power? When have we ever
casinos?
casinos. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
But what would they gain? What would they gain financially from this?
No, I don't think
the plaintiffs in that case.
This is not a financial case in any regard.
Okay. What
the judge said, what Coker Catelli said when she looked at this, she said this is an attempt to create a social. She said this litigation is a case using federal litigation to achieve social goals without proper evidence. That's what she said. So that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to achieve social goals.
410-662-8780. Dan Rodericks here with Jim Astrakhan, attorney Jim Astrakhan, and sports at large commentator Milton Kent. An email here from Kevin who says, "Seems to me use of redskin is akin to the N-word, an insult. I wonder how many Native Americans refer to themselves as redskin. Some people argue, well, if you change the redskin's name, what about the Braves or the Chiefs or the Seminoles? Braves or Chiefs are designations within a tribe. And Seminoles or Blackhawks are okay because they were the names of legitimate tribes, so that argument doesn't hold up." If you want to write a comment and send it in by email, our address, midday@wypr.org. Let's take a short break. We'll come back and take some more phone calls. Dan Rodericks here with Milton Kent and Jim Astrakhan. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Midday. Dan Rodericks here with Milton Kent and Jim Astrakhan, getting a chance to talk about this ruling about Washington Redskins, the team name, officially deemed disparaging of Native Americans last week by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. And Jim Astrakhan has assessed, you know, what exactly this means legally for the Redskins. And Milton Kent is here with his comments about this. And over the years, your thinking evolved. So you basically said, well, you didn't think about it all that much. It didn't offend you years ago, and then you started thinking about it and says, you know, that's a bad name. It's time to change that name.
It's funny.
A leftover.
You get caught up, I think, and the other thing, too, is you get caught up, you get closer to ground zero. My guess is that if I live closer to Washington, my thinking might be different because my assumption is that most people, you know, in the Washington area, being longtime Redskins fans, probably don't see this. You know, you have to sort of get away from it. to sort of go. And because the thing they hang their hat on that you hear over and over again is, well, it's the tradition. This is the name that Sonny Jurgensen and Billy Kilmer and Joe Theismann, they all played on that name. So why can't we keep it? This is something that we've had. My grandfather rooted for the Redskins. Mm-hmm. Why can't we keep that?
You know, I mentioned Abe Pollin changing the name of the Bullets to the Wizards. That was his doing. Was he under any pressure to do that? Had there been anyone written about it in newspapers and said, you know, Washington has a serious problem with violent crime, and Baltimore did before that when it was in Baltimore, so change that name?
No, the hook there was he was friends with former Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, who was assassinated. And he sort of felt that, I can't do this anymore. I can't have a team.
Plus, I didn't know that. Did you know that?
Plus, the rising crime rate in Washington spurred him to say, I want to change the name.
Let's take some phone calls. John in Baltimore, you're up next. Go right ahead, please. Hi.
Hi. I have several observations. This caller, I really find abhorrent the use of the N-word. But on the other hand, blacks is an okay term. I mean, it was sort of, and whites is an okay term. And I've been a longtime collector of Native American memorabilia and stuff from the 16th, 17th, and 1800s. And many of the treaties, many of the greatest Indian orators constantly refer to themselves as the Red Man. And I don't think, in the case of the Redskins, where they're, the song is Hail the Redskins. And, they're holding them up as great examples. And I've also, the other thing I don't hear much of is any commentary from the Native Americans themselves. And, we talked about the Native American conference or whatever that thing is, and they prefer the term Native American. But I've spent a lot of time in the last number of years on Indian reservations in the West, and they do call them reservations out there in actual use. And they refer to themselves as Indians, because I said, do you guys, what do you prefer? And they were like, no, we're Indians.
They don't refer to themselves as Redskins, do they?
I asked him about that because, this topic's been around off and on for years. And I said, what do you think about that term? And they said that the majority of them said they don't have any problem with it.
Okay.
Why not do a poll of the people affected by this, not relying on the Native American conference? You might be going for the politically most correct.
Well, let's go with the case at hand. The case at hand is that you had a group of plaintiffs who made this claim to the Patent Office hearing board, right?
That's right. But they're only a small group. They're five or six people.
Right.
But going to the caller's question, you're absolutely right. If you could do a survey and have, really accurate statistical samples so that you could show, you don't have to show a majority, but a composite, group of Native Americans, and you could show, of course, you'd have to go back to 1967 or 1992 because there was a series of registrations.
Excuse me. So the test would be whether the Native Americans are themselves feel disparaged?
Only.
What about the rest
only.
Of us?
Only.
The rest of us have an opinion about this?
No. We have an opinion that doesn't count. It does not. You absolutely have to. There's two steps. What is the meaning of the word associated with the services? And then secondly, when you look at the affected group, how do they view this? And so it is strictly Native Americans.
Okay.
You don't have to have 50% or more, but you have to have a large composite.
Okay. A poll, a national poll, a Harris poll of American public opinion generally about this
wouldn't do it. But as the caller said, a survey of Native Americans, assuming, it was an accurate survey,
mm-hmm.
and you had a strong, you wouldn't do everybody, but you had a strong statistical sample, that would be an interesting approach. But you'd still have to cure the problem of, how did you feel in 1967 or 1992? A lot of people weren't around 1967.
Let's take another call. Frank in Catonsville, you're on Midday. Hi.
How you doing? I attended the University of Massachusetts at Amherst back in the early 70s, and our mascot's name was the Red Men. And there was a hue and cry about that. The Massasoit Indians in southeast Massachusetts near Hyannis were against it. Others were against it as well. Russell Means or Dennis Banks, can't remember which one, from the American Indian Movement, visited the campus. And he spoke to this issue, and he was questioned one day. I remember people saying, well, what about the bears and the lions and the tigers? And his response was, well, we're human beings. We're not animals. And we don't think that this name is an appropriate one. They did change the name at the University of Massachusetts to one that's more appropriate for the citizenry of the state, to the Minutemen. So I understand this whole issue. I have Native American blood in myself, as well as African American, and I can see what's going on with that. And I've polled friends of mine who are Hopi and Navajo, Cree and Iroquois and Mohawk, and most of them do not like the name. They particularly hate the name of Chief Wahoo and all those other kind of crazy ones.
Yeah.
But there is a precedent here, and I can understand why people are so adamant about wanting to change this.
Thank you for this call, Frank. I appreciate that. And I also want to say I'm not convinced by citing references from the 16th and 17th centuries where the word was being used even by Native Americans themselves. I'm just not convinced by that. I mean, this is the 21st century. There are a lot of terms and phrases we don't use anymore.
Precisely.
Because they're offensive.
You know, it's funny. Stanford, Dartmouth, they've all changed names from Indians or so forth to other names. St. John's used to be called the Red Men. Now they're called the Red Storm. To this direct point, the University of Miami in Ohio, they were the Redskins. They're now the Red Hawks for just this reason. You know, when you know better, you do better.
Drew in Parkton writing to us by email, Milton and Jim says, I agree that the Redskins name is offensive and ought to be changed, but this conversation has been going on for a few months. Actually, it's been going on for several years.
Yes.
Those who will be convinced are convinced, and those who are not are unlikely to change their minds. This includes the owner of the Redskins. I believe him when he says that he will never change the team's name. The burden now falls to the Redskins fan base and to the NFL at large to put pressure on the organization for a regime change. Dan Snyder may continue to find himself on the wrong side of history, but sooner or later he will find himself without a team. But that's not, that could have been written by Milton Kent for a Sports at Large commentary on Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah, I think I saw it. Yeah.
You want to use that? Jeff in Odenton. Jeff, you're on Midday. Hi.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I had a comment on there are other disparaging Indian names given by other Indian tribes that haven't been addressed, such as the Cheyenne. The word Cheyenne means red talkers, which was given to them because their form of speech was unintelligible. The name Apache was given by another Indian tribe, which really means enemy. Das Pason means fat bellies. If these groups are so intent on changing an English-defined disparaging term, why are they not going out to correct these other terms as well?
I don't know.
Because there aren't billions of dollars tied up in having the name Cheyenne. There isn't a football team. There isn't like a team representing the most popular sport in the country that gets 16 or 17 plays a year on national television.
And in the case of Cheyenne, I would say that is a term. I agree with you about its origin, but where it is now in the public mind, it has a completely different meaning. It is the name of a place in the mind of most Americans, and it seems harmless that way, innocuous even. The term Redskins associated with a logo of a very red-skinned Native American means only one thing to people. It doesn't have some new separate meaning.
And you know, I would refer everybody back to a very quick history lesson. The person who changed the name to Redskins was George Preston Marshall, the owner of the Redskins. He bought the team in Boston in 1937. Really quickly, this guy, I mean, on the list of racists, this guy was right up there at the very top.
He was
one of the best. I mean, he did it really well. He declined to have a black football player until 1962. It was only forced to do that because a condition of moving into what was then DC Stadium, which was on federal ground, was they had to basically come into compliance with anti-discrimination laws. That's the only reason that he brought in a black ball player. And at his death in 1969, his foundation that he founded declared that no money from this foundation would do anything towards anti-discrimination laws. So, you know, let's not kid ourselves. This guy didn't do this out of the goodness of his heart to honor Native Americans.
Jen in Baltimore, we'll go to you next. Thanks for calling with your opinion on this. Hi.
Boy, tempest in a stadium, huh?
A bit, yeah.
There are no ball teams called the Whiteskins. And I recall my brother, very young, was given an application, and they asked his ethnicity, and his, believe it or not, this was many years ago, his complexion. And he was so young, he wrote peach. peach. And I'm also recalling the rugby team from New Zealand who call themselves the All Blacks.
Yeah. I actually got an explanation of where All Blacks came from. It had nothing to do with Aborigines or anything like that or black players. It was a mistake made in the transmission of a sports report on Telegraph. A reporter for, I think it was the Times of London, something like that, I can't remember, said they play like all backs. He meant to say they play like all backs, meaning in rugby, very swift right. runner, right? Because that's a specific position. But it came out all blacks, and then it stuck. That's what I was told by a New Zealander himself.
Can't trust those reporters.
Meredith says, considering the legacy of the genocide and displacement of Native Americans in the U.S., I think we ought to put in perspective how preposterous it would be to hear, say, a sports team named such as the Berlin Rabbis. Thank you very much for that, Meredith. But, I mean, that's something that we do not talk about very much in the United States, do not like to acknowledge. That is, at the root of it all, this whole discussion, but is not often stated. So. Another quick call here. Bill in Baltimore, I guess you'll get the last comment on this. Bill, go ahead, please.
My wife is Cherokee, but I think Snyder ought to say he'll change the name when they take Andrew Jackson off the $20 bill. He was the president who set up the forced death march of the Cherokees.
Yeah.
And I think that's more important than the name.
Yeah.
Besides, anybody who's a fan of the team just calls them the Skins for short. Nobody really calls them the Redskins.
Mm. So what happens here, Jim? What happens next? They appeal this to, to a different district court.
It's going to get appealed to a different district court. Let's see. It's 2014. Maybe 2017 we'll get a decision. It may get appealed further. I think Congress is going to step in because I think there's too many implications regarding business.
Yeah. And, Milton, you don't see Daniel Snyder doing what I suggested or others have suggested.
No, but I think what will happen is Roger Goodell, the commissioner, and the other 31 owners will pull them aside and say, look, let's make this happen.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I think so?
Yeah, I really do. I really do. Because I think this is going to cost the league money and poor goodwill. Look at what the NBA's done. Look at what the transformation the NBA's gone through since Adam Silver took over.
Right.
And made the Clippers owner out.
Yeah. Milton Kent, the Sports at Large commentator on WYPR, and Jim Astrakhan, Baltimore attorney. Thank you both for being with us for this first hour midday today.
Good seeing you, Dan.
Yeah. Take time for some lunch before you leave. Brought to us today by Joe Squared Pizza. Delicious pizza from Joe Squared. Thank you very much for providing lunch on Fridays for our guests. We'll take a break here for a little pizza. And for the news from NPR, and then the second hour of our show.